Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sutter, joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSutter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, make sure to follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page at Locked On PHX Suns. All the follows mean a lot, so appreciate it. I know it's slowly growing by the day. I think we're around almost 1,300 followers now, so appreciate it. We're going to talk today our final discussion that's been our entire week going about the entire position groups. Started with the guards on Monday, wings on Wednesday. Now we have the bigs on Friday, Brendan, which are Dragan Bender, Marquese Chriss, DeAndre Ayton, Rashawn Holmes, Tyson Chandler. I think it's kind of an interesting group there because not a lot of proven talent there at all, to be honest, outside of Tyson Chandler. DeAndre Ayton will get a lion's share of the minutes. I think he might play close to 35 minutes per game, to be honest, right alongside Devin Booker. And then I think Bender and Chriss will be really interesting because will Rashawn Holmes just fill the Allen Williams role of just barely playing at all or like 15 minutes per game or something like that? Or will it be Bender or Chriss getting some backup 5 minutes as well? So this entire group is just really intriguing to me.
Yeah, it's tough to tell with the minutes, like who quite backs Ayton up. It's one thing just looking at like who's going to play and when, just where the rotation will go, how it will break down is... And it's been kind of nice going through position by position, I think, is like you see just – so even with the guards, we were thinking, okay, well, what about Davon Reed? What about Devin Booker? What, should we count them as guards? You know, what are they doing on the court? Who are they going to be playing with? And then the wings, it's kind of completely interchangeable. And then now you get to the bigs and you're like, okay, well, you know, Trevor Ariza's going to kind of be a big. He's going to be starting at the four. We've talked about maybe T.J. Warren playing there as well. You never really know who's going to be on the court with who. And so it's so interconnected that you do kind of look at it and think maybe it's like Ayton and one of these guys, one of these other three guys on this list or four guys on this list that actually even play consistent minutes. And that's kind of hard to believe with how much talent and I guess draft investment there is in this group of players, but there's just not enough minutes to go around. And I think they would be better served to give more minutes to the wings than these bigs, and that might just be how it breaks down.
I want to start this off right off the bat here just because I think it's kind of interesting. I'm going to go a little off script here. About Dragan Bender and Marquese Chriss, do you think both those guys make it through the entire season? And the first part of that question also being, do both their team ops get picked up? I think we're both in agreement there that they will be, but do you think they make it through the season past the trade deadline? Because I think if we're talking about if the Suns are going to be aggressive here soon, I have to think it's inevitable, to be honest, that one of Bender or Chriss is going to be attached in that deal.
I agree with you. I mean, we talked about it on Wednesday when we previewed the wings, and I think I said this Wednesday, if there's going to be a trade, I think it will have to include TJ Warren for salary purposes and just the fact that I think there's an urge to get him off the roster, to be honest. I would say the same thing about one of Dragan Bender and Marquese Chriss. Obviously not for salary purposes necessarily, although they do make quite a bit more than most rookies, having been high lottery picks. But I think for a value and just the trade assets the Suns have, kind of looking down the line, I think it has to include one of Bender or Chriss, and it has to include TJ Warren. And then after that, you're kind of thinking, depending on the caliber of player, but I definitely think their options will be picked up, and I definitely think one or both of those guys will be heavy, heavy parts of the conversation about trades come February and then on in July.
I agree with you there. I really think that, like I was saying, it's inevitable that one of Bender or Chriss is gone, and I think this is the prove-it year, to be honest, between those two guys. But really quickly, I want to bounce over to Tyson Chandler because his situation is rather interesting. I wrote the team preview for it on Bright Side of the Sun about a couple weeks ago. If you haven't read it, check it out. Because I honestly think that Tyson Chandler will fill the Jared Dudley role this year. And even to a lesser degree, to be honest, I think maybe the first 20 or so games he might see minutes. But I think he's going to quickly dwindle off to around only 25, 30 games played this year, to be honest. Because he's going to be 36 years old, 18th NBA season. You have Rashawn Holmes now, an athletic big who could run the floor unlike Tyson Chandler is now at his age. Then you also have Chriss and Bender who need minutes. I really think Tyson's not going to play that much this year. What do you think, Brendan?
I think we're both in agreement there. I think we even saw that last year. His career is winding down. I think it'll be fun to have him in the locker room and have him be in Phoenix for his last season. That's maybe just a little selfish, but it's cool. We haven't really had even Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire, Sean Marion, all those guys who meant a lot to the Suns specifically throughout their careers didn't end up finishing here. And so it'll be cool. I mean, he's obviously not going to be known as a Sun when he retires. If he makes it into the Hall of Fame or something crazy like that, when we look back on his career in a while, it won't be, oh, he was such a great Phoenix Sun, but it'll still be awesome to have somebody like that who's meant so much over the past 20 seasons almost to basketball be here for his last season. But as far as playing, no, I don't quite think he will be a big part of any of it on the court. But I think he'll stick around, I think, for a long time. I don't think there'll be in any rush to trade him, despite how much money he makes. They're just not really in a position to use that space. So he'll be on the roster, I would imagine, for a while. But again, probably a trade candidate, or as we talked about kind of with Ariza, if for some reason the trade market just slides out from underneath Phoenix, then he could be a buyout candidate as well.
What do you think his buyout market would be, to be honest, Brandon? Because he's going to be a guy, like I said, in his 18th year, can't do much outside, just run the floor a little bit, be a lob guy in pick and roll situations like he was Devin Booker last year. Can provide some help defensively, but not much nowadays like he used to in New York and Dallas. What do you think? Would it just be like a contender, like a Houston or a Golden State? Would one of those teams actually need a guy like Tyson Chandler to go far in the playoffs even more just because of him?
Yeah, I don't think the Warriors quite need him just because they don't really play centers like him. I mean, they played JaVale McGee, but that was because of his ability to do what you just said, and I agree with Chandler can't anymore, which is finish lobs, roll toward the basket and bring defensive attention with him. That stuff's not really there for him anymore. Though I think the Rockets maybe make some sense, maybe the Thunder. I don't know. I think he'll have a role just as depth and, really competitive teams start to rest their guys toward the end of the year. So maybe he's just somebody who comes in, on a really cheap deal and just kind of adds some depth, plays here and there. And obviously, like we were just talking about, what he'll mean to the Suns, he'll just be a great presence down in the locker room for the whatever team wants him.
All right, we're going to transition over here really quick, Brandon, to DeAndre Ayton, the next guy we wanted to talk about a little bit more before we go into segment two of our show. And just how important how important of a cog is DeAndre Ayton offensively for the Suns this year? Because I know defensively, he's not going to be a guy relied upon early on because he's learning an entirely new system he's never done before. But I think right off the bat, he's going to be the second option offensively for the Phoenix Suns. I think he's going to average easily over 15 points per game. I think he's going to be close to around the 17 to 19 range, just because Booker and him are just going to be able to be in a lot of good spots always. And if a summer league is a preview, Brendan, and Igor's offense, he's going to be a really efficient guy right off the bat, and that changes a lot of things for him.
Yeah, I agree. I think he will be the guy that gets the second most, just has the secondary offensive scoring burden more than anything. We talked a little bit with the wings. I think there's some guys in that group, depending on how they develop this season, who could, maybe finish second in points per game. But I think Ayton will get, as you said, we saw in summer league, how much of an emphasis Kokoschkov's offense kind of put on finishing possessions in Ayton's hands, right? Like, we saw the movement we were used to. We saw the ball movement. We saw a lot of just action on and off the ball to create space, just get the defense kind of backpedaling a little bit. But a lot of the time that's still finished in Ayton with an Ayton post up or a quick, dump off or a lob, or at least trying to get those things. As we saw, they didn't really succeed as often as we would like. But I think you're right. He'll be the guy who, aside from Devin Booker, is asked to carry that scoring load and finish possessions, and I think that'll be good for him more than a lot of other bigs, even in this draft or just looking through recent history. You even look like Joel Embiid, Karl Anthony Towns, those guys had really dominant seasons, both of them last year, but they were used in a way that required them to put out so much energy on offense, be in amazing physical shape, and try to really carry their teams. And, you know, they both had incredible seasons, respectively, on their teams. But I think the way that Ayton will be used will be even more beneficial for him and for the Suns.
I know there's a segment on our show here, Brendan put in here for possible trades, DeAndre Ayton, as possible as trade value, so to say, just how good of a player he could be right off the bat and what value he could bring elsewhere. And I think it's an interesting topic there. Brendan, I pulled up a list of the top 10 centers because I assume that in a trade with DeAndre Ayton, you would have to be bringing an entirely new franchise center. So I pulled up 10 centers here for you. I'll go through the list with you of who we would trade DeAndre Ayton for, or who would you rather keep DeAndre Ayton or trade him for this guy? And I'll start off here for you, Brendan. I'll go 10 through 1. Miles Turner.
No, I wouldn't.
Not even close. I'd hang up the phone. Andre Drummond.
No.
Same. I agree with you there. Drummond brings the rebounding aspect, which I think Ayton will as well. But I think Ayton will be eventually a better defender than Drummond, a better shooter than Drummond, so I agree with you. DeAndre Jordan.
No.
I agree. Jordan, just like Andre.
He's too old, right?
Too old, and also the same thing. Like Andre Drummond, he can't shoot, and DeAndre Ayton can. Hassan Whiteside, that's an easy no for me as well. What do you think?
That's a no. I feel like I would rather have Miles Turner than all these guys, too.
Really? I agree.
Yeah.
I'm really high on Miles Turner this year. He looks like he's getting in really good shape. Him and Victor Oladipo, I think, are going to make some serious noises here in the Eastern Conference. I think they're going to be one of the top three teams, to be honest. But back to the list here. Marc Gasol, too old for me as well. He's going to be teetering 36, 37 years old, and he can shoot the ball, but he can't rebound with what, like I think DeAndre Ayton can, and I think he has just way higher upside.
I agree.
DeMarcus Cousins.
Well, if you had said like a year ago, I think that would be where you start to think about it, but now with the injury, I think that's a no, obviously.
I wouldn't. Would you have done it before the injury?
I think I would have thought about it. I would. I mean, the very end of the first season, he was in New Orleans, and then obviously the beginning of last year up until the injury, he looked like a really much improved and much more like team focused player. I would have thought about it. I don't know. I mean, we also haven't seen DeAndre Ayton, so I would probably still pick Ayton pretty clearly. But this is where I would start to think about it, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I agree with you in that sentiment there of thinking about it, but I still think it's an easy no for me. Going back here, Nikola Jokic, I say no. I would keep DeAndre Ayton instead.
I think I would keep Ayton as well, although you get down to like that. I think that one is kind of like the tipping point, I would imagine. I don't know who else is on your list, but I would think everyone after Jokic I would trade Ayton for, just because Jokic has a – pretty similar, you know, they're not similar stylistically, but like Jokic is about as valuable offensively as you're hoping Ayton gets, assuming Ayton never becomes elite defensively. Like we talked about all throughout draft time, is like Ayton has to become so great on offense that his defensive liabilities don't matter as much. And Jokic is pretty much there. Towns is pretty much there. I'm assuming he's coming up on this list as well.
So I forget if you said yes or no. Would you have traded Jokic? Because I would seriously consider it, but honestly, I would still keep Ayton, like I said.
No, I don't think I would. I would, yeah, but I think everyone after him, I don't know who you have, but I'm assuming this is like the breaking point for me.
Okay, we are down, I believe, to the final two here. Whew, tough one here. Joel Embiid.
Yeah, I would trade Ayton for Embiid.
I agree with you. I would take Embiid more just because I think that's what Ayton should become. And
exactly. He's had that two-way impact since the minute he walked on the court, right? So that's exactly what you hope Ayton can become, and he already is that. And he's pretty much, you know, he's right in the same age range too, so it's not like you're getting an ancient 30-year-old.
Knock on wood here, but if Ayton doesn't have the injury history, does Embiid's injury history scare you at all there in that kind of trade?
It would. I mean, if you were to actually trade these two guys in like a real situation, yeah, I think that would worry me. But just as far as like value wise, I think that's where Ayton's value is, which goes to show you, like, if you just rank it like that, then he has, maybe depending on where someone else might, I know there's a lot of people really high on Jokic, that means that Ayton has like the third, fourth, fifth highest trade value among NBA centers. That's, I mean, he was just the number one overall pick. That's not really surprising, But when you think about it in the context of how excited people are about the centers in the NBA, that's pretty impressive.
Next guy on our list here, Rudy Gobert.
Yes, I think I would trade. Oh, I thought you were going to have Towns. I thought that's who was coming next. I think I actually wouldn't do Gobert. I think he doesn't have enough offensive value, where I think, you know, he has kind of, he's almost the opposite of Ayton, where his defense is the majority of his value, whereas his offense needs to come along a little bit more for it to be a super, for him to be a super elite player. So I actually think I'd say no to Gobert. How about you?
I agree with you there as well, surprisingly, because I would seriously consider it, though, because Devin Booker with an anchor behind him, that's really intriguing to me, because he would just have to, he can still play like the James Harden sort of role with Capella a little bit, and to an extreme level, because Gobert, I think, is the best defensive center in the NBA, to be honest. So Gobert with Booker would be exciting to that point, but he doesn't have the offensive ability like Ayton could. And I think if Ayton ever developed defensively, he'd just be an absolute monster. So I would do the same thing as you, Brent. I would take Ayton over Gobert. So you were hinting at there a little bit, Brent. The last guy on our list here, Cat Karl-Anthony Towns. And I would – that's a tough one. I'm actually kind of struggling with it, to be honest.
I would trade him. I think – Towns, we talked about it with Embiid. I think Embiid's an even easier call just because he already is so impactful on defense and has that switchability, has that rim protection. He's already grown out his body despite the injury history, whereas Ayton still has a ways to go with both of those things. Towns, though, is maybe even more similar to Ayton in that his offense has gotten to that point and his defense still has the chance. But I think his offense, you can just bet on it already so easily. You know, and he still has room to grow. He could become a better playmaker. He could become a better three-point shooter. Whereas Ayton, you know, I think there's still more worry. Even if you were to just say Towns when he was a rookie and Ayton when he was a rookie, I think you would still do it. Although, you know, that maybe complicates it too, just because we didn't know what that Towns was going to struggle at that point either. But, yeah, I think I would.
Yeah, so that means we would trade DeAndre Ayton for the following guys, and that is, we thought no on Rudy Gobert, no on Nikola Jokic, but we did say yes to Cat, because I would actually take Cat, but I would struggle with it a little bit just because defensively Ayton could reach a higher potential than Towns. But I would do Towns, I would do Embiid, and that's, I think that's it. So top three guy, center-wise, value-wise, do you think DeAndre Ayton in the next 3 years, Brendan, will be a top three center in the NBA behind those guys?
I think he has the potential, and that's where I'm, you know, that's what I'm basing it on, is that he could. Will he? I mean, it's a really tall order to get up past Jokic, Gobert, even the guys we said no to, but I think that just goes to show the potential he has.
All right, we're going to segment three here on our show, and it's segment two, and it's highlighting one player to watch per positional group. And Brennan, I'll start off with you there because I'm interested to see who your guy is.
Yeah, it's just, you know, we've been trying to get at guys. We talked about Trevor Ariza on Wednesday a little bit in depth, more than we had before. And the guy that I wanted to hit was Rashawn Holmes. We mentioned at the top, like, who gets the minutes? Who's quite Ayton's? Who is Ayton's backup night to night? Is that even a consistent, real depth chart breakdown type of position? Or is that based on the matchup? How many, you know, minutes does that guy even get with Ayton playing? Like you said, maybe upwards of 34, 35 minutes. But Rashawn Holmes just interests me because he's been somebody I've watched since he was in Philadelphia, just a pogo stick of a player, a guy who is super athletic, super bouncy, inconsistent everywhere else except for just being an athlete. Not as good of a finisher, not as great of a rim protector as you would expect from somebody like that, but also, like we mentioned, when the Suns traded for him, has some, you know, some hype as a possible stretch big. He's a little, you know, getting a little ways into his career now where you worry about that. But, I mean, do you think Holmes is the guy who is just straight up Ayton's backup? Or do you think it's Bender kind of switching between the two positions, four and five, kind of playing the most minutes out of all these bigs outside of Ayton, and then everyone else just fills in whenever there's an opportunity?
I think how the center rotation is going to shake out, let's say halfway through the season, it's going to be Rashawn Holmes backing up DeAndre Ayton mainly with Dragan Bender, excuse me. He would be the guy that's kind of like just switching in a little bit at a time. I don't think he will play it much, to be honest, at center. So it's mostly going to be Holmes. Tyson Chandler is going to be mostly playing rarely, to be honest, because I think he'll be a DMP guy. I don't think he'll be on the team past March for buyout period. I think they're going to buy him out to let him go to a contender if no trade happens. So I think Holmes is going to get at least 15 minutes per game, I would say. He averaged, looking at his minutes now, 15.5 for the Sixers last year. So maybe 15 to 20. 20 is probably a little generous. And looking at his stats here, Brendan, he averaged 1.3 assists in 15.5 minutes. Per 36, that shakes out to 2.9 assists. And he's really good on the advanced stats on that as well, with a high assist percentage. And Igor's offense, Brent, I think Rashawn Holmes might be a little diamond in the rough as far as a playmaking big goes.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting aspect of him that you pointed out right when they traded for him that I think does show why there was interest there. And I think it's going to be something that the Suns explore much more than the Sixers did. I mean, the Sixers run an offense that isn't super different from what the Jazz ran when Kokoschkov was designing their offense. So I think he does make sense to come from that system to this one. And the Sixers just didn't have much of a need for him. I guess my concern with how and when he plays is you mentioned what he did minutes wise for Philly last year. And he was, Embiid's backup for sure for the majority of the first early part of the season. But then as they went along and they were, playing smaller, playing through Ben Simmons a little bit more, and then and definitely into the playoffs, you know, Ersan Ilyasova and even Dario Saric were soaking up those minutes at the 4 and 5, and Holmes wasn't really needed and couldn't play against versatile lineups that they faced against Miami and Boston. So that's just my concern. And, you know, for a guy who is maybe third, fourth, fifth on the depth chart, it's not a super big worry, but I'm excited about this guy, so I want it to work out. I worry that he won't ever be able to leap over that hurdle in his way of just playing in this modern NBA.
They do have his bird rights, though, Brendan. So if he has a good year, do you think they just re-sign him before free agency starts?
Yeah, they definitely, you know, they'll probably be able to get him for cheap considering he's a big man. We saw that with Alex Len. We've seen that with so many guys, even Alan Williams this year, who just don't have the market like they thought they might. So he's definitely a candidate there, somebody who just – he's going to be good depth, and he's young, so he can grow with the rest of the roster.
My guy here in the highlight one player in this group, and it's Dragan Bender, no surprise to anyone listening probably. Averaged 6.5 points per game last year, but his three-point percentage was 36.6%. Doubled his three-point attempts from 2.3 to 3.9. I still believe in Dragan Bender, Brendan. I really believe that Igor Kokoschkov is going to be that guy that's going to really not take him to like a next level, so to say, but he's going to make him a valuable piece. Because we saw it last year, to be honest, like in the games where he had like a plus minus above, like I'm going to pull up right now because his advanced metrics when we had a really good game, the Suns were honestly really good. Look at when he had a plus 19 and above, they were 5-0. They beat OKC by 14, Dallas by 6, Brooklyn by 8. Minnesota by 2, Dallas by 27. And Bender didn't do much, but he did have a good rebounding games and good assist games, shot good from 3. So I don't think he's ever going to be a starter, to be honest, Brendan. I think his ceiling is a six-man role player type of guy off the bench, like a Boris Diaw. So what do you think is his ceiling, Dragan Bender? Because he intrigues me more than Marquise does a lot more because he can shoot already. So yeah. What do you think Igor is going to be able to do for him?
Well, I think his ceiling, I'll just say what I think his ceiling is this year. People get mad when I try to make comparisons of what he could become in the future. So I won't even guess just because, like, we all know how frustrating he's been. And trying to predict even game to game what he'll be is pretty just it's a recipe for frustration. But I think this year, you know, he played 25.2 minutes last year, played all 82 games, started 37, was just consistent. There was a lot of games where when he would get really high into the upper 30s minutes-wise, he would start to struggle. He didn't have that stamina throughout the game at 20 years old with the, you know, unfilled body that he, you know, is still struggling to develop. So I think this year what he really needs to do is, we talked about it all last year, he needs to rebound. He's going to be a pretty common center option for the team, I think, with how Kokoschka is going to want to play on both ends. So he's going to need to rebound. Otherwise, he's not going to be able to really stay on the court in, at that position. And I think, you know, defensively, if he can really just focus on that and become the type of defensive player that he has the potential to be and show those steps, switching out on smaller players, protecting the rim a little bit better, getting better in the post, being stronger in every regard, I think that'll be really helpful for him. So, I mean, I agree with you. That's probably the main guy to watch, like, what will he do and how will that affect the Suns' future. But I just picked Holmes because he just, you know, he's somebody we know so little about.
For sure. I really think, honestly, this entire group's interest, and we'll get into Marquese Chris a little bit when we go over our final box score predictions for the year in our last segment. But really quickly, I wanted to ask one more question on Bender. And it's just about what do you think is going to be his main skill set that's going to come out of Igor? Because right now, he's just a guy that's petrified of going inside. He shoots 300 threes already. Shot 36.6%, which could go up. He could be a 40% three-point shooter at 7'1". That's really valuable, in my opinion. So where do you think Bender is going to be? And also, what do you think about Dragan Bender and DeAndre Ayton as a potential duo down the line as far as a future starting front court?
Yeah, I really like that. I that's kind of my thought when people say that the Suns need a power forward. I mean, they have two, right? I'm still holding out hope that one of those guys is at least playable as a starter. You know, the decision clock is kind of already ticking down to zero pretty quickly here, but I think if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Bender, and I feel like he has the potential to do that still. I mentioned he's only 20. Everyone probably knows that, and they're sick of hearing it, but that's really important when you think about he's been in a franchise that is so chaotic his first two seasons. He barely played his rookie year, and now he's entering a system and a season where a coach that actually makes sense for him is taking over. So I think he's going to be used the way we all hoped he would be, as a playmaker from the elbow, as a floor spacer, as someone who can survey the floor and just make simpler shoot pass decisions. And then he does need to drive more. He does need to be more effective. Tracy McGrady is a guy I always think of on the jump all year. He just goes crazy when guys can't attack switches with how much switching goes on defensively in the NBA now. You have a guy like, he says it about Gobert all the time, but Bender is an even better example of somebody who can't just take the ball in the post and score a basket. That's really infuriating when you're watching the Suns play. He needs to be able to do that, but if he's used more like he should be, I think that stuff even is less of a concern.
Really quickly, before we go to that last segment, I wanted to touch, because we might as well speak on everyone else, a little bit on Marquese Chris. What do you think about him next year? Because he's a guy that I think his option will be picked up. I think we're both in agreement, like I mentioned at the top of the show, that both options will be picked up. Do you think that Marquese Chris is a guy that stays around past the trade deadline?
I would say it's more likely that he gets traded than Bender. I think the franchise, I mean, just by the fact that they could have chosen Chris at four, right? They picked Bender in 2016, and they've given him more playing time. They've given him more support publicly, I would say. And so I feel like that's the guy that they want long-term more than Chris. Although, you know, I really think it's pretty open. If Chris came in and played really well, that changes things. But I think as we stand now, Chris is the most likely guy of those two to be included in a trade package.
And really quickly on his three-point percentage as well, Brendan, it went down from 32.1% to 29.5%. Same amount of attempts per game at 2.65. His points went down as well, 9.2 to 7.7. His minutes stayed the same. Pretty much a regression across the board outside of rebounding. What do you think is Marquese Chris's future as far as what he can develop? Because I really don't think he's going to survive on this roster unless he develops a consistent three-point shot that is near Bender, probably around like 35% or so to be consistent as far as what Igor wants to do.
Yeah, I think offensively he has the ability to be a pretty elite, efficient finisher. There's really no excuse. It's pretty unfathomable, honestly, that he shot 42% from the field last year. That's like Alex Len, when we would go crazy about why is this guy who's 7 feet tall unable to finish around the rim. Chris isn't quite as tall, but he's added, you know, size and strength each of the last two seasons. I think he'll do that again. he should be really an incredible lob finisher and, you know, just pick and roll player. And then I really think defensively is still where he has the potential. We've, on his best nights the past 2 years, it's been a result of his rim protection and his energy on defense. He cut his fouls last year from 5.4 per 36 to 4.8. That's trending in the right direction. I think that needs to cut like almost in half to really be somebody that I trust defensively from game to game. But I think that's, you know, it's easy to say young players need to get better on defense, but considering how little we've seen from him on that end over the course of the past two seasons, that's huge for him.
Is it reasonable to say, I know we've been kind of on the worser end as far as Wanamaker or Chris is going to go, do you think it's possible at all that both these guys survive the next 2 years and they're a part of the Suns' future as far as both being a backup at the four and the five? Because they could develop at least cheap. They'd probably be signed back pretty cheap, to be honest, because they haven't really shown much on the court outside of a few things. They could be around for a long time just as energy guys off the bench, not really so bender, but more of like a playmaker type, like you said, and a shooter. But long term, they could be guys that grow with that main core.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely, when I say, like, when we talk about the future of this team, I think it's more, how do they fit with Booker and Ayton? How do they fit with, like, the trajectory as far as the finances and roster breakdown of this specific team? I think both of them have a place in the league. I don't know. Maybe people don't think that about Bender, and I agree, but I think he'll just, I just have such confidence that he'll at least get a little bit better than where he's been, that I feel like both of these guys will float around the NBA, have a role. They're both so young still. So, you know, even, you know, we talk about like the, even the greatest players sometimes take a while to develop. The role players for sure do. I think there's guys who linger at the bottom of rosters for a long time that never seem like they're anything. And then all of a sudden they're 28 and they're the eighth man on a playoff team. So certainly I think that there's a spot. And if the Suns, I mean, if they play well, the Suns probably have no problem locking them down.
Interesting question here for you, Brennan, and it's who's most likely to be gone by the end of the year? And I'll answer that first. I think it's pretty easily between these five guys, Bender, Chris, Ayton, Holmes, Chandler. Tyson Chandler, I think he is going to be bought out by March. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that one's an easy one. It's been interesting. We've done now, this is the last positional preview, and I go through and fill out this last segment of who's the most likely to be gone, and it's been pretty easy every single time, which is interesting, but I guess that just shows kind of the weird, like, there's some extra guys at every position that don't really make sense for the future of the roster, and it's just pretty likely that they'll not be a few part of the future of the roster. But Tyson Chandler is the easy one. I think you're right. He'll be on a different team come March.
Let's make it interesting, though. Take Tyson completely out of the equation. So just Bender, Chris, Ayton, and Holmes. So really take Ayton out of it, too. Bender, Chris, Holmes.
I think it's Chris for the reasons I just said. I think they have a little bit more invested in Bender. I think they like Bender a little bit more. They have more optimism about what he'll be in the future. So altogether, I think you add it up that way, and Chris is probably the most likely to be gone. I just don't count Holmes because I don't really see what value he would have in a trade in general. I just think he's kind of an unwanted player, though certainly those guys move around as salary filler, and maybe some other team wants to take a chance, just like the Suns did, if they shop him. But I think it's Chris.
We're back in agreement there. I think it is Marquise Chris. Rashawn Holmes, I think, can be re-signed to a pretty cheap contract next year. I like his possibilities to become a shooter. Like Brennan said, he's a really good playmaker, fits perfectly in that aspect in the Igor's offense. But final part of our show here, Brennan, going through these five guys really quickly, their stat lines, their field goal percentage, their three-point percentage, and their regular box score stats of points, rebounds, and assists. And for the big guys, probably blocks instead of assists, so points, rebounds, and blocks. We'll start off here with Tyson Chandler. I'll throw the caveat in how much games he's going to play. I think it's going to be 29 games played for Chris, or excuse me, not for Chris, for Chandler. He'll average around 4 points, 4 rebounds, and about 0.4 blocks in about 12.5 minutes per game.
All right, I would say he'll play 15 games.
Wow, that is low.
Yeah, I just think he'll be gone partway through the year, and he won't play unless it's, garbage time or some weird situation. So I would say, I would say statistically he'll be kind of close to where he was last year. So I'd say 6 points. I'll go 8 rebounds. I'll say a half a block because he's not really been a big blocks guy during his career with the Suns. And then, I mean, he'll be up in the 60s as far as field goal percentage, I think, for sure. Always has been.
Next guy up, Rashawn Holmes, and I'll go with – let me pull up his previous stats real quick. So I'll defer to you for a second. What do you think about Rashawn Holmes?
Yeah, I think minutes-wise, I guess we talked about minutes. We'll just skip that for him. Yeah, I think he could get up to, like, I don't know, probably around where he was last year. So 6 or 7 points a game. I don't think scoring is going to be his big value here. Rebounds, I think he could do a lot better closer to his second season. So I'll say 6 rebounds. 6.6 rebounds and a block per game. And then, you know, 55 to 60% shooting, I think, is where he needs to be.
3-point percentage. You think that's going to be higher than 12.9%? Do you think it's going to be?
I certainly hope so. I'd say if he could get even up close to 30%, I think is reasonable. He shot 35% his second year. I think he'll have the opportunity to take a lot of those this year.
Okay. For Rashawn Holmes, I'm going to go with him playing around 75 games, to be honest. I think it's going to be his highest games played of his career so far. Field goal percentage of 57%, 3-point percentage at around 25%. I think he'll shoot about 2 threes per game here. His career average is 1. And he will also get 6 rebounds per game, 1 block per game, while averaging 6.5 points per game and about 18.5 minutes per game, which I think is pretty, yeah. I think that's pretty reasonable. So,
I think we're right in line.
Marquese Chriss, next guy up here. I'm going to include his 3-point percentage because I think it's really crucial for his development. He's going to play, I'm not going to throw games in here for this one because it's a little too dicey with him as far as the trade deadline goes. I'll just do points, 7.1, rebounds, 6.5, and then 3-point percentage is going to be, I think it's going to stay static, to be honest. I think it's going to be close to around 30%, so maybe a 1% uptick from 29.5. I'll say like 30.2%, and then his field goal percentage will be about 44%.
Yeah, it's tough. I think you're right being not so optimistic. I mean, he would have to not really improve that much for our predictions about his not being a long-term part of this roster to come true. So I would say he could get closer to where he was his rookie season as far as scoring goes. I think that'll be easier for everybody to score this year. So I'd say maybe let's go 8.5 points. I'd say right around the same as last year, about 5.5 rebounds, about 1 block. I'm in agreement with you though. I think around 30% from three, I don't see where that improvement comes from. And minutes, I mean, he's been right around the same both seasons. I don't think he'll necessarily have much more of an opportunity this year. So I would even maybe say somewhere around 20 minutes per game, maybe even a minute or two less on average than last year.
Okay. I agree with that. I think Bender and Chris are going to be fighting for minutes. I think Bender's going to become quickly more valuable just because all of he can bring to the floor. And that's the next guy on our list, Brendan, Dragan Bender. What do you think?
Yep. I think he'll be around even more minutes per game, to be honest, maybe somewhere around 28 minutes per game on average for the end of the year. That's tough, maybe. I don't know. Now I'm thinking about it, but I'll hold to it. So 28 minutes. Field goal percentage has to go up. 39% last year. That's atrocious. So he needs to get somewhere around 45% from the field. And I think he could get, you know, I would say I'll predict 38% from three, though I wouldn't be surprised if it went even higher than that. Points, I think, you know, not too much higher, but if he gets a little more efficient, then maybe he gets up to, I'll say, 8 points per game. I think he needs to get up closer to like 6 rebounds per game and somewhere around a block per game for him to be to improve as much as I'm predicting he will.
I think I'm going to be a little lower. I'll go around 26 minutes per game, which will still be a career high for him. Played 25 last year. Field goal percentage will be around 39%. I don't think he's going to do much else outside of that, to be honest, unless I see some extreme growth from him. So I'm going to say about 39-40% from the field. He is going to shoot, I think, close to 40% from three. I think he's going to be about 39% from three. Rebound, it's going to be about 6, I believe. I think you're right on track there, Brendan. 6 rebounds per game and about 0.7 blocks per game, which would be a new career high for him. Went from 0.5 to 0.6, and now I think 0.7. And his points per game will be at 7.7 points per game, which is right in line with you, Brendan, at 8 points per game. So do we just think Dragan Bender is going to in his career quickly turn to a valuable role player? How much stock are you putting into him right now?
Yeah, I think he can. I think he can get even higher than that. But again, it's so tough to. I don't necessarily feel like I have the statistical backing to say that. I just have so much optimism about him. But I mean, you and I are both in agreement. Moving on to DeAndre Ayton, right? That he's somewhere around. I think you have a little bit higher scoring, around 18. But we've guessed his stats before. Do we need to go through him? I think people know kind of where we are. We talked about it with the awards.
Rookie of the year, do you think that he will win it? Well, let's predict that really quick.
I think I would say I would take the field. I'm so high on this rookie class. I know that's the boring answer because you're not picking a specific player, but we talked about it on our award show, the guys that I think could win it. So go check that one out if you're interested. But I think taking the field just makes more sense with how much of a stacked class this is.
I would, if it was a low bet, DeAndre, and I believe, is top three in Vegas right now. I would definitely go if he was like maybe four or five on the list, but he's not. So I would take the field as well, just because I think Ayton will put up counting stats, but I think a lot of it matters about if you make the playoffs or not. I think there's going to be a guy that surprises people this year. I don't know who it's going to be, but I think it's going to be someone like Donovan Mitchell last year, or it's going to be someone like maybe Colin Sexton, because he's a really good scorer off the bat. Probably be starting for Cleveland, to be honest, because I think they're going to trade.
Yeah, he'll have a big role there, and there's not many other guys. He's definitely my dark horse for that.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement there. So I know we went a little long today on today's episode. Appreciate you guys listening. That was the end of our positional previews, part 3 of 3. We'll be back with you on Monday, starting off a new interview series for the rest of the offseason.